Hi, it's the Quiz Fun Podcast. I'm Maya, back with another episode. Dreamnails had a promising year of 2020 ahead of them, with the release of their first full album in the UK and North America, and many tour dates ahead, but as many others, they had to completely reinvent connecting with fans solely over the internet instead of meeting in person and playing live shows. Despite all this, Dreamnails powered through, put out their self-titled record and smashed it with special livestream shows for the UK and North American audiences, providing them with a unique gig-in-a-box experience, even sending them pieces of sticky venue floor to recreate the experience. The self-titled record really is a testament to the growth and evolution Dreamnails has made, with explosive, almost anthemic belters of a song like Kiss My Fist and This Is The Summer. This is very much a record for the queers and all people of marginalised genders, and I for one couldn't be more excited about it. For this episode, I was lucky enough to interview Dreamnails bassist Mimi and lead singer Janie. So let's kick things off. Hello friends, welcome to episode number 8 of the Quiz Front Podcast. I'm your host Maya, my pronouns are she and her, and today we welcome as a guest Mimi Jason and Janie Starling from Dreamnails. It's so nice to have you as guests today. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks for inviting us. So I'm Janie, I'm the lead singer in Dreamnails.
And I'm Mimi, I play bass in Dreamnails.
Heck yes, I'm honestly really excited to, I guess, finally meet you kind of in person through Zoom, which is fine enough. I've been following what you do as a band for quite some time, and I'm a huge, huge fan. But
amazing.
Yeah, so for those of... Well, everybody tuning in for the first time today, on the Quiz Front Podcast, we invite marginalised artists and crew to talk about breaking into the music industry, growing as an artist, finding crew gigs and much more. We do try to give the listener a feeling of empowerment that they can do too. And who is Quiz Front Booking, you ask? We're touring at booking agency that prioritises queer, BIPOC and disabled artists, and we operate all over North America, UK and Europe. So anyways, let's get into it. I would love to know, how did you two get into music in the first place? And yeah, who wants to go first?
Okay, you go first, Janie.
I feel like, I was going to say you should go first, because I feel like it's been your whole, we come from like almost like polar opposite journeys to being in the same band. Yeah, maybe go first.
So yeah, I'm Canadian. I moved to London, UK in 2014 to actually study music. So I'm originally like a classical pianist, and I did musical performance in uni. And then after I graduated, Lucy, who I knew from the band before, because Lucy and I had started a band and we only played one show. We met off Gumtree basically, but Lucy messaged me saying Dreamnails needed a bass player, and I just kind of picked up the bass. I wasn't a bass player before I joined, but I knew how to play guitar. And yeah, that's how I ended up in Dreamnails, but I've been a musician almost all of my life.
So I basically, Dreamnails came about because I was part of a feminist direct action group, and we were doing loads of political action and climbing buildings and jumping on red carpets to protest the cuts to domestic abuse services in the UK under austerity. This was 5 years ago in 2015. And I just had this realization in terms of like protest strategy around like, why is it that, you know, as women and non-binary people, we're always fighting to claim public space for like 10 minutes to like, you know, block a road or set off some flares or do something disruptive, but then it always ends and we all go home and then everything, the status quo just remains. And I think I was really interested in creating spaces for women and non-binary people to express their collective rage at the amount of violence that we face and our collective joy. And to do that in public spaces that we could kind of claim as our own and keep as our own. And I think music was a perfect place to do that because there are so many venues and gig spaces. And it's something that like we live very true to 5 years on, because we call all the women and non-binary people to the front at every show. And we make a really big point of creating safe spaces in the venues and festivals that we play. But in terms of like any training or background, I just literally don't have it. And I think, in terms of like singing or as a vocalist, for me, it's always just been more about bringing the energy and like not having to be pitch perfect. But I think I'm journeying now, like 5 years in, and now that we're like signed to labels, like, oh, like I should really be looking after my voice more and like focusing on doing both at the same time.
That's amazing. I'm obviously a huge fan of how you do this women and non-binary shout at every show that you do. I've never seen you all play live, unfortunately. It never quite worked out. But I'm a huge fan, and I wanted to get a little bit more into your artistry and the songwriting a little bit. Yeah, like how do you find artistic vision, not just for like your music, but also for everything visual around it? For example, like you've done zines for a long time. I, by the way, really love the kind of roller skate imagery on the self-titled record that you released a couple of months back. How did you come up with that, for example? I think you even sold roller skates at merch at one point, didn't you?
Yeah, I think there was like 5 pairs of roller skates that were hand-painted Dream Nails roller skates.
Wow.
But yeah, I really feel like the roller skate is just the symbol of like queerness, especially in London. I don't know what it's like. Are you still in Germany? Is that where you...
I'm in Austria, in Graz.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just feel like London, that is just a symbol of queerness. And I think for the album cover, it was just perfect because it's kind of like, it's just a bit like subtle. It's just like a subtle nod, like this is a queer record.
That's amazing. Moving on into also artistic vision, but more kind of the songwriting, I guess, perspective. I was wondering, how does songwriting work within your band? Is it kind of like the thing where, say, like one person brings in a song idea and then the band gets together and makes it into a Dream Nails thing? Well, how does it work? And also the bonus question, how has that changed throughout the pandemic? Do you all do like Zoom sessions or... Yeah, how does that work now?
I think there's no real set format, and we're constantly trying out new ways of producing songs. I think back in the day, in the very beginning, like it started, I had a bunch of lyrics and I was like, Anya, like I've got all these lyrics, like how do we make them into a song? And then, you know, we would work as like a vocalist and guitarist and build the skeleton or something and like take it to the band. But I think as the years have gone on, we've done more things where it's just like working on lyrics together or an idea for a song. Like our song Text Me Back, for example, happened when half of the band, we'd all gone and played Glastonbury at the weekend. We had a rehearsal the following Wednesday. Half of the band had hooked up with people at the festival who then ghosted them. And then we just jammed and we just created a really fun song that like things, ideas were just flying out and then it all came together.
Is that how the song about ghosting on your self-titled record came about?
Yeah, it came from brutal, bitter experience.
Oh, no.
And then like similarly our song Jillian, like both Mimi and I discovered that we both like came to exercise through doing the Jillian Michaels 30-day shred. And we wanted to like make a song and write lyrics that like reference quotes from it. And it became like a bit of a cult thing. And then like everyone was pitching in and we came up with the hooks. So yeah, I think as time's gone and it's become like very collaborative and like free flowing, just as trust has built between us.
That's an amazing thing. I feel like that is also like, this is just some sort of theory of mine that I haven't completely thought through, but like playing in the like male hardcore band back in the day, I always really struggled with the song writing process and the way that people would criticize ideas and like the kind of culture in communication, I guess. And I feel like that is in itself can be such a empowering feminist idea, how you approach songwriting from a more, not necessarily collective standpoint, because it's not wrong to have like one songwriter in the band and like the other people more like filling in the gaps if that's communicated well and like done in an ethical way, I guess. But makes me think that if I ever want to play in a band again, that's like what you just described as more the structure that I want to have for sure.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah, I feel like it's like you definitely have to have that like trust, and if you're around people that are kind of like criticizing your ideas, then you don't want to share your ideas, and you don't want to feel like your ideas aren't valid and you're in the song and everything.
So. Exactly. Like I genuinely haven't picked up a guitar in like 3 years, simply because yeah. like it all kind of brings me back to like that, and it's such mm-hmm. It's such a vulnerable place to be if you like write music together. And I feel like maybe even more so in a band like yours, where, you know, there's quite not necessarily intimate topics, but say like songs like Vagina Police, which I really love, by the way, but like that is a song where I feel like it's quite a vulnerable place to be in, to write that together about such a sensitive topic.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't want to like you would really want to choose your criticism wisely and like do that in a way, like, don't know what the right word is, but like you would really want to do that in a quite warm and like empowering, constructive way, and like really mm-hmm. think about how you phrase things, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that kind of idea extends to like the ways that we operate as a band, because we're self-managed. We're self-managed by choice. So that means that there's a lot of different tasks to do every single day and week, like constantly. And I think we've made an effort for like a few years now, always thank each other for the work that is being done. Like, oh, thank you so much for putting together. Thank you for doing that. And I think that constant like gratitude and acknowledgement of labor is really, really important to, one, like recognize, making sure that division of labor is like fairly split, but also just making sure people don't feel taken for granted or burn out, because burnout is brutal.
Especially now since Dream Nails has been growing quite a lot, I want to say. Like at this point, I feel like your self-titled record had quite a big response, I want to say, and especially now that you're signed to not just the UK-based record label, but also, is it the other one in Canada? Is it in Canada?
Yeah.
How is that? Like, do you feel like the pressure was rising a little bit with like the new record and like putting it out on two different continents, all the while being in a pandemic and all of that? Or is it just kind of like an organic process anyways?
I don't know if we ever really felt the pressure, because we were just too busy trying to make it happen. I mean, we recorded the record in August 2019. So we had like a record to deliver Dynalone and stuff. And from there, it was just like, okay, plans, like sorting out the release and how we had to postpone that with the pandemic. It actually was, it actually gave us more time to think. We actually released more singles, made more music videos. So it wasn't too bad in the end. I mean, we've postponed our tour that was supposed to be our album release tour in March 2020. So that was sad, but I think, yeah, we're just really excited about the releasing in the UK and in North America. Like we've done like lots of like kind of special things, like the vinyl in North America is a different color, or like we have like more like creative input on like all this just cool little decisions we have to make. And I think it's actually interesting, because lots of the social media announcements are things we have to plan. We now have to think, wait, we need to make sure we do this for North America as well. We're like not used to thinking of like an international audience.
So true. So true. Like with timings, like, oh, wait, no.
It's fun though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's super fun. You must have the same thing, because You were in North America
as
well.
Yeah, yeah. The beginning, it took me a while to figure out the time zones. And like every now and then, I still, like the other day, I totally came into a meeting an hour late because there's this one weird week in autumn where daylight saving time in Europe changes. Then the North American daylight saving time only changes like a week later for Halloween. And so there's one week in between where, you know, Central Standard is not 7 hours behind me, but like 6. So I still mess up every now and then. But honestly, I think the North American music market, specifically the US one, obviously, is quite exciting. And I honestly think that like to grow as a band, there's just no way around not doing the American music market. And it just holds a lot more potential. You know, like the UK is also just a really, really small island. And also,
yeah, it is.
Like the European mainland music market, quite honestly, is, I feel like to grow as a band, it just makes sense to prioritize America. Yeah, but like that's also my thing, that I'm quite frustrated with a bunch of things about the European mainland music industry, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Story for another day, I guess. But I brought up the being signed to 2 record labels internationally before, and since there's potentially, probably, hopefully, many young artists listening to this episode later, looking for the next step of their career, especially in I was going to say these unprecedented times, but I feel like that phrase has worn off so much.
unprecedented times, TM.
Yeah.
But what would you say, when is the right time to sign with a label as an artist? And what can you expect from a label that you can't do yourself, especially as a self-managed band?
Well,
we're fresh. We don't even know what we're doing. Actually, something we did learn is, in terms of like all of the rights and the royalties to the music, whoever pays for the recording owns the music. So actually, as a musician, especially if you're a political musician, you want to save up to pay for your own recording, because if a label pays for it, then they own the rights to your music. So actually, in terms of like how you live your politics, or how you see things panning out for you, I think that was a really valuable thing that we learned, because we paid for our whole recording up front. It meant that we still owned all of our music. So I guess like that's just something to be aware of, because we didn't really know that, and no one really says that to you. And then you kind of look at Prince and you're like, wait, that's why you hated your label. Okay, I get it now.
Yeah, exactly. Like you'll probably heard about the Tiny Engines thing. Was it this year? I don't even have a sense of time anymore, but like, Tiny Engine was this huge indie record label in the US, and pretty much any kind of growing larger indie artist was on that label, and especially the label had a bunch of marginalized artists on there, like queer bands and stuff like that. So
okay.
And eventually the thing exploded when one artist, Stevie of Adult Mom, if you know them, they spoke up about it, and turns out that Tiny Engines pretty much didn't pay a lot of their artists, and the label pretty much exploded after that. And I think that's where I very much learned as well, as an artist, always own your masters. No way around it.
Yeah. And I think it's also worth saying that we literally sold merch and toured for like 5 years to save up for this, to pay for the recording of our album. So it wasn't just like an easy like, oh, we'll just pay for this. It was like, yeah, a lot of it's hard. So don't be discouraged if you think, oh, I can't pay for my album. We know, we feel you. We literally feel you. It's expensive. And we had interest from other people who wanted to, like other labels, I'd say. Other guys from different labels, and we just didn't get the right feel. We were like, okay, this is exciting, you know, it's exciting for someone to be interested, but you have to kind of take a step back and be like, is this the right thing for us? And I'm so happy that we kind of said no to those first few people. As soon as we met Jack from Alkapop, we were just like, it was just so nice. He was so into our music and so supportive. Yeah, we just knew immediately, and we went over like the contract in great detail back, like with the dine alone contract as well, we went through in great detail. So I would say, like, don't just sign anything. Even pay someone 100 quid to look at it for you.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Know your rights.
Know your rights. All across.
Yeah, you just got to know your rights, honestly.
Yeah. And I think as part of that, it's like, question the pull to urgency. Question urgency at all points. And I think urgency culture more broadly is like a facet of white supremacy culture and grind culture and just like outputs, moving fast. And actually there's so much in pulling back and thinking, does this feel right in our gut? And like the reality is that, you know, we've been around for 5 years. It took us 5 years to release our first album. That's pretty rare. Normally bands kind of appear and they drop an album and that's the first you've heard of them. But we really, there's so much longevity in the structure of how we're doing things, because we just, you know, we know what we want and we're not in a rush to get fucked over in the quest of getting it.
Yeah, it's a sustainable concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just going to say, it's also just disrupting the norms of production in the music industry, which is like, make music, more releases. It's like, no.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like that Daniel Ek from Spotify saying that artists need to release an album every, I don't know. I don't even remember what it was, but it was basically impossible standards.
I think he doesn't even want albums anymore. Like, seems like the music industry at this point is just like, put out a single and another single and another single. Mm-hmm. And like albums don't even, like, in the eyes of Spotify, albums are not even a thing anymore to like work for. Just release music every month. And like, I get it. Like, I personally enjoy listening to a record and like having like the vinyl in my hand and like appreciating the artwork and like pay the band, all of these things. I appreciate that. But like, I know that that is quite, basically, if you want to make a band's or like your solo artist project thing sustainable financially in a way that you might be able to live off it at some point, unfortunately it feels like you kind of have to lower these standards of like how you want to put out music in a way. So like, obviously I fucking hate the guy, like, don't get me wrong here, but I also think that like, yeah, releasing music quite often is probably the best way to like stay relevant and like, you know, earn the money. But I totally like, Do you see what I mean? Like, I totally love the point of like taking the urgency out of it, disrupting the urgency culture, which I think you described quite well.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I'd love to see a music industry that was actually created by musicians rather than people who aren't even musicians. I just really wonder what it would look like. It'd be like one album every 7 years and you just live off the money.
Yeah. I mean, what you get paid per stream is just,
it's sad.
Insulting. It's insulting. If you were to have like a few million record sales or sales of your single back in the day, you'd be set, but now you've got like $10. It's insane.
Yeah, seriously.
Imagine if Spotify paid 1 cent a stream. Imagine.
I think in terms of trajectory, it's a difficult question to answer, because I don't really know what that's meant to look like for a political, like, queer feminist band like us. I feel like we just need to do some collective visioning as a band, because there is this like cookie cutter, do your first album, then do your second album, tour, do your third album. And I think, where is the joy in any of that?
Yeah, I think we definitely want to, like, one of our goals is definitely, you know, go on tour in North America and stuff. I think we've got these like milestones we have, but it's nothing like, I feel like we're just kind of looking at the next step ahead. We don't have like some grand vision like at the end of the road. I think we're just kind of like looking at what's possible for us and doing what we can and what we think would be, you know, feasible for us. And we all work full time and stuff. We all have jobs and we don't really make any money from the band. It's just kind of like, we love doing it. And yeah, I mean, if we didn't have a pandemic, we would have, you know, loved touring and loved playing our festivals this year, but it's forced us to kind of like be more creative. So now we're just kind of doing some live stream shows and stuff like that. So I think we're just trying to keep going right now. And just keep going. I guess we don't really have like a huge, I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard. I guess and it's funny, like, because when you asked that question, I went to a place of like achievements and like what we want to do. But I think something that we've always done, and I can't imagine us not doing, is just being so fan focused. Like, we have a really close relationship with a lot of our fans. We have a mailing list where we like give them the heads up when new stuff is coming out, give them exclusive access to merch. We have a WhatsApp group with like 100 people in it.
Oh,
now
I saw that. Is that right? The banana phone group?
Yeah, banana phone. Banana, I was just phone. Messaging banana phone before our nice chat. People were sending all their pictures of their pumpkins.
That's so beautiful. But it's that, like, that's what really matters, and like the connections that you make with people, and you know, coming to do podcasts like this, deciding to release a limited run of vinyl to raise money for Abortion Support Network. It's those kind of things that I know, like, we give so much energy to and we get so much energy from, and we want to keep doing outside of whatever we're releasing or recording.
Yeah, like the question that I like to ask, I try to, generally in this podcast, I feel like I want to try to get to where an artist wants to be, but like I also want to try to like bring out not just the person or the band, but like the person sort of behind it. And like, what I'm honestly really interested in is much less an answer like, oh yeah, we're going to release a record and like do all of these things. I really care like about the people behind it, and like to bring out what they enjoy and like where they're going and that kind of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely a part of like being a political band and raising money when we can, having these ideas and like trying to raise money for the charities we believe in. I think that's definitely like the motivation and the kind of personality behind the band, is that that is really important to us, and that's something that we probably will always do as long as we keep going.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I think as well, it's hard to say like without being in physical spaces, but we were working with the Good Night Out campaign to make sure that every single venue on our album tour was going to be Good Night Out trained and accredited. And I think like another thing that we're using our music and influence as a band to do is just to make gig spaces safer for women and non-binary people, for queer people, and also like within that, men who come to our gigs to actually like experience Dream Now shows as a learning opportunity and a space for self-reflection, because I think that's what we've managed to do so far. And if we can continue to do that, that is making like very tangible changes to people's like lived experience and worldview.
Yes. I feel like the music world is such a good place to like do direct change, I feel like.
Yeah, it's direct action. It's a political space. It's disruption and direct action.
Yeah, and you can reach people so well in like music spaces, I feel like. And music, for example, can be quite a great vehicle to bring across important messages.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing.
Yes. We miss playing gigs.
Oh, I can't imagine. I did see that you announced the tour for 2021. Like, honest answer, do you think it's going to happen?
Oh, it's so funny. The other day, we were looking at our old banana phone video where we were advertising, like, we were like, oh, our album's been, our April tour has been postponed to September. And Mimi was like, September, that's cute.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah, remember when we all thought we'd be going to live gigs in September? Yeah, no, I don't know if it's going to happen.
Honestly, I myself, for my part, it took me about, I think, 8 months of the pandemic to finally just accept that my job as a booking agent and like company owner of a touring company is just gone. It's just gone. Like, honestly, as far as I'm concerned, it's not coming back. This sounds a little bit cynical and dark, but like, it helps me personally to just cope with it and like sort of not move on, but like sort of force myself a little bit to adapt. And so...
Mm-hmm.
Right, there's an acceptance.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly. And so again, it took me like 8 months or something, but eventually I was just like, yeah, it's over. Like, Quishfront as it was is over. And I'm kind of okay with it at this point. And I decided to adapt. And that's actually how Quishfront Booking is currently undergoing a slightly secret major change, and we're about to become an artist management company, which is quite exciting. And there's a new team that is already assembled. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, secret, Quizfront Booking mm-hmm. is gonna be relaunched as Quizfront Artist Management by February 2021. All I'm saying is, for me personally, it kind of helped to just accept that it's over and then adapt and like move on to another thing. And you know, if touring ever comes back, I'm happy to book tours again and just be an artist management company that also books tours.
Amazing.
Great.
Yeah, I'm thinking if touring comes back, it might be this time next year. Some kind of...
I would say give it 2 years at least.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
I think something that's like been really interesting for us, because as DIY musicians, and I think we've taken a similar view to you, it's like when you're DIY, you just work with what you have, right? And I think what we have right now is screens, and we did our first live stream show in September. We're doing another one.
Yeah, how did that go? I was going to ask about it.
It was amazing.
I love the idea of a live stream gig in a box. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was... It's so cool. Fun. Yeah, we fill the box. Well, I mean, we've got more gig in a boxes coming. We've got one on December 6th,
yes.
Which is Feminismus, where we've like, yeah, curated this box that we're selling. I think there's still some left, actually. But yeah, it's got your gig essentials in it and special Feminismus stuff. We've got stuff that's been designed by Jeannie Espinosa, who did all of our album artwork and single artwork. But yeah, the live streams are really good. And even though we're not playing in front of anyone, it's actually quite cool that we've got like the chat box open and we can ask questions and people are talking. And
it's about the
community.
Yeah,
it's super nice. And it's kind of more interactive in a way.
It is. I agree with you. It is more interactive because not everyone has the guts to like come and say hi to the band at the merch table, but you would just say it. You would say something in a chat book. And I remember one of the things that a couple of people said was, it was amazing how much energy you had without a live crowd to bounce off of. Like, I was dancing around my kitchen. Like, I scared my dog. Like, all this really sweet stuff where people were really like, Mimi had this amazing idea to create a piece of like, sticky venue floor for everybody's boxes.
Wow.
Yeah. So they had that to jump on.
Yeah.
That is really cool. Yeah. I think honestly that is the future of music for like the next 2-3 something years. Just like create online community. Like did you by any chance see the Rat Boys 25-hour telethon Halloween stream the other day? They're
no.
probably one of my favorite Mm-mm. bands. They're from Chicago, an indie band. They spent the last months doing loads of community building over Twitch.
Yeah.
And they also have a Discord server thing. Like that connected with like a Patreon system, stuff like that. They're really good at what they're doing, and I think they built up a lot of online community at that point. And so they just went all in for Halloween and did a 25-hour stream
wow.
without stop.
That's a long time.
And basically made it a huge festival where they had all of their favorite artists and friends play. And it was not just artists playing, but also, you know, they did stuff like the Hot Ones Challenge, where like a friend of theirs came on. Obviously through like a Zoom meeting, and like they tried different like hot sauces and stuff like that, and like had a chat, and they had breakfast with some of their friends, and they did pumpkin carving with Julia's front singer sister, and it was quite funny and really nice to watch. And yeah, they did a bunch of stuff, and all the while they managed to raise over $13,000 to be donated to the Equal Justice Initiative and Girls Rock Chicago.
Amazing.
And really rallied people to go vote, obviously.
Yeah.
And it was great. I didn't manage to watch through the whole 25 hours because it's just insane.
Please.
But,
Sleep is a thing.
Yeah, I think I watched like 6 hours on the first day, then went to sleep and watched like another 5 hours the next day. And it was great. And in the beginning, they had over 2,500 people watching. And in the end, they still had like anywhere between 150 and 250 at any given time. And that's amazing. And I feel that to me was proof that like community still works without seeing each other in person, as sad as it is. But like you can be inventive and you can adapt and do things still.
And connect.
That's the most important thing.
Speaking of connecting, I have to disconnect from this call. I have a work call. I have to go back to my day job now. But thank you so much.
Thank you, Janie. Thanks for being a guest today.
Bye.
Bye, Janie.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Dang, I was going to ask one last question. So I'm like running 3 minutes late. So I'm just going to ask you that, if that's all right. The question that I tend to ask artists in the end is, after this fucking garbage sack of a year, is there anything you feel like you've learned through like adapting to the pandemic? And anything you've learned living through this pandemic so far?
Yeah, I feel like this pandemic has been so tough for everyone. Like literally everyone is going through this, and it's such a weird time because no one's ever had to experience this before, and we're all collectively experiencing it together. And I think the thing that I've learned is, well, I feel like I've learned a lot, but I've definitely been more aware of like how much time that you have when you don't have to be commuting all the time, or if you don't have like three jobs, which is what I was doing before. So now I'm a piano teacher. I teach over Zoom, and you know what? It's amazing like what you can do when you actually have time and you actually have time to like sleep. And I feel like that is, it's been like, even for the whole world, I mean, lots of people have had more time to do things like protest or like rally together for like these causes. Like, I feel like we just didn't have time. Like, I remember before I'd just be like, oh, there's a protest. Well, I have to work. I mean, how many people have done that? It's just, I feel like what I've learned is like, we give so much of our time to like working and commuting. We don't have time to think about the things that we really care about and take time for ourselves.
That's a really nice thing you've learned from the pandemic, for the lack of a better word. No, seriously, it's great. And I fully agree. It's amazing what you can do with time. And also, I think from, I guess, through a political lens, it's also great that so many people are finally discovering that, you know, doing home office is just so much better. At the same time, it's interesting how, you know, disabled people have been saying this for forever. We need more home office stuff. Commuting doesn't really work out for everybody. And now companies go like, oh yeah, we can do the home office thing.
Yeah, but it was always possible.
It was always possible. And I feel like that's generally a quite positive note to end today's podcast on, just, you know, seeing that is possible and that a different work environment and wider society is possible, and it can be a little bit slower and a little bit less effective, and that's fine, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyways, Mimi, thanks so much for coming onto the podcast today. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
You're very welcome. So yeah, that is it for today. I've been your host, Maya. This has been the Chris Font Podcast. Thanks everybody for listening, and stay tuned for next guests. Goodbye.
You like us on the video. You like us when you have control. You want an on-screen fantasy. But you hate us holding hands in the street. Do you want us on your screen? Do you want to hear us scream? Do you want us on your screen?
And this is it for another episode of the Chris Schwann Podcast. This has been Disrupting Urgency Culture with Dreamhouse. Make sure to check out the self-titled full-length on Bandcamp and all other major streaming platforms. And most importantly, buy tickets to the December 6th special Feministmas livestream show. There are only 100 gig-in-a-box packages available. The last batch sold out in 48 hours, so be advised to move fast. The Quiz From podcast is recorded and produced in a home studio setting in Austria, right in the middle of a second lockdown. Things are pretty scary here right now, but I do hope the situation is a little better wherever you're listening from right now. We have new episodes out every second Saturday. Thanks again for tuning in, and we hope to see you again next time.